विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण पृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी नीति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पश्चात्तादिशुता ओं नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओं नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओं नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद् भागवतम थर्ड कैंटो चैप्टर 21 कन्वर्सेशन बिटवीन मनु एंड कार्दमा टेक्स्ट 28 समाहितं ते हृदयं यत्रेमान परिवत्सरान सा त्वं ब्रह्मन् नृप वधु कामं आशु भजिष्यति समाहितं ते हृदयं यत्रेमान् परिवत्सरान् सा त्वं ब्रह्मा नृप वधु कामं आशु भजिष्यति समाहितं ते हृदयं यत्रेमान् परिवत्सरा आत्वां ब्रह्मा नृपवधु काममाशु भजिष्यति समाहितं ते हृदयं यत्रेमान् परिवत्सरान् सात्यं ब्रह्मन् नृपवधु काममाशु भजिष्यति Mataji's. Samahitang has been fixed. Te, your Hridayam, heart, Yatra, on whom, Iman, for all these, parivatsaran, years, sa, she, tvam, you, brahman, o brahmana, nripabadhu, the princess, kamam, as you desire, ashu, very soon, bhajishyati, will serve. Translation by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. That princess, O holy sage, will be just the type you have been thinking of in your heart for all these long years. She will soon be yours and will serve you to your heart's content. Please repeat. That princess, O holy sage, will be just the type you have been thinking of in your heart for all these long years. She will soon be yours and will serve you to your heart's content. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Lord awards all benedictions according to the heart's desire of a devotee. So the Lord informed Kardama Muni, the girl who is coming to be married with you is a princess, the daughter of Svayambhuva Manu, the emperor, and so just suitable for your purpose. Only by God's grace can one get a nice wife just as he desires. Similarly, it is only by God's grace that a girl gets a husband suitable to her heart. Thus, it is said that if we pray to the Supreme Lord in every transaction of our material existence, everything will be done very nicely and just suitable to our heart's desire. In other words, in all circumstances, we must take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and depend completely on Him and depend completely on His decision. Man proposes, God disposes. The fulfillment of desires, therefore, should be entrusted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the nicest solution. Kardama Muni desired only a wife. But because he was a devotee of the Lord selected a wife for him who was the emperor's daughter, a princess. Thus, Kardama Muni got a wife beyond his expectation. If we depend on the choice of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we will receive benedictions in greater opulence than we desire. It is also significantly noted here that Kardama Muni was a Brahmana, whereas Emperor Svayambhuva Manu was a Kshatriya. Therefore, intercaste marriage was current even in those days. The system was that a Brahmana could marry the daughter of a Kshatriya, but a Kshatriya couldn't marry the Kshatriya could not marry the daughter of a Brahmana. We have evidences from the history of the Vedic age that Sukracharya offered his daughter to Maharaj Jajati, but the king had to refuse to marry the daughter of a Brahmana. Only with the special permission of the Brahmana could they marry. Intercaste marriage, therefore, was not prohibited in the olden days, many millions of years ago, but there was a regular system of social behavior. Samahitang te hridayang yatre man parivatsaran satvang brahman ripavadhu kamamashu bhajishyati. That princess, O holy sage, will be just the type you have been thinking of in your heart for all these long years. She will soon be yours and will serve you to your heart's content. So, the Vedic scriptures give two types of instructions. One is pertaining to our existence in the material nature, and the other is attachment to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These two sections have been categorized in two different types of dharma. One dharma is the dharma of the body, and the other dharma is the dharma of the soul. The dharma of the body is the body's needs are fulfilled. But in order to fulfill them, one has to act in a specific way. That prescription has been given in the Veda. Sometimes people think that spiritual life means giving up everything and going to the forest. But when we study the Vedas, then we see that that is actually not the presentation of the Vedas. The Vedic presentation doesn't disregard or discard the materialistic life also, which is centered around the body. We have two identities, body and the soul. Initially, our needs are physical, pertaining to the body. But the ultimate need is the need of the soul. And both are fulfilled if we follow the Vedic culture. Here we are seeing that Kardama Muni was a mendicant. The Brahmanas are generally absorbed in their spiritual activities. Brahmanas generally retire into the secluded places, and there they spend their time in cultivating their Krishna consciousness. The Brahmanas generally stay at a solitary place, study the Vedas, and they meditate upon the Lord in their heart. So that is the general characteristic of a Brahmana. So Kardama Muni was a Brahmana. And therefore Kardama Muni was involved in that activity. But at the same time, we can see that Kardama Muni was contemplating on getting married. Like, and not only getting married, it's been described that samahitang te ridayang. Samahitang means, samahita means being absorbed, being fixed, being absorbed in the thought, in the heart. What was he thinking of? He was thinking of a woman. And that also, padivatsara, he was thinking of a woman for a long, long time, for years. Padivatsaran, the word batsar means, one batsar means 1 year. And batsaran means many years. So one may think, you know, what kind of meditation is that? That he is thinking of a woman. But here we are seeing that because he is a devotee, because he is surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Personality of Godhead knew his desire and he fulfilled his desire. And how did he fulfill his desire? He arranged for him to get married to a princess. And not just an ordinary princess. He was to get married to the daughter of Sayambhava Manu. We can see the the heritage or genealogical line, the Brahma's son is Manu, Svayambhuva Manu. And Svayambhuva Manu is the first man, you can say, is the father of mankind. From Manu, the word Manava has come. Manava means mankind. So human beings are coming from Manu. From Brahma to Manu, and Manu got married to Satarupa, Shatarupa, and all the human beings, we all are Manu's descendants. So his daughter is Devahuti. Akuti, Prasuti, and Devahuti. So Devahuti was the youngest. So this youngest daughter was offered to Kardama Muni. Now here we also have to understand one thing, that Kardama Muni is contemplating on a woman is not just an ordinary man's contemplating of a woman. Kardama Muni's contemplation was of a different kind. He was meditating upon the Lord, and the Lord decided to come as his son. And that's why this arrangement had to be made. The Kardama Muni is a very, very exalted personality, a great devotee. And the Lord had to appear as his son. Therefore, he also had to get married to a suitable wife. And so we see that Kardama Muni was arranged to be married to Svayambhuva Manu's daughter, Devahuti. Generally, the daughters are very dear to the father. And the youngest daughter is extremely dear. Of all the daughters, the father becomes most attached to the youngest daughter. So this youngest daughter, Devahuti, was given to Kardama Muni in marriage. And why did Svayambhuva Manu do that? Offer his daughter to Kardama Muni, a person who apparently didn't have a home to stay, didn't have any money, didn't have any material opulence, practically a beggar. A princess is getting married to a, not a beggar in that sense. We will see Kardama Muni's opulence. This is the Vedic society. One voluntarily accepts the life of renunciation. Not that they are poor. They are, if they wanted, they could have had an unlimited amount of wealth. But they voluntarily didn't want to get involved in a materialistic way of life, of comfort and luxury. So, and the whole purpose is actually the appearance of the Lord. The Lord has to appear. And he has to appear as a human being. Therefore, there is a need for a father and a mother. So who did the Lord select to be the father? Kardama Muni. Who did he decide to accept his mother as his mother? Devahuti. And then, this is just one aspect of this episode. But the other aspect of the episode, we can see that it is Kardama Muni is married to Devahuti. But he is not really in getting into a household life in that sense. Although he got married, but he is still absorbed in his meditation on the Supreme Personality of God. So much so that he doesn't have any external consciousness. He is meditating on the bank of the river Saraswati. And he is completely absorbed in the thoughts of the Supreme Personality of God. He doesn't have any external consciousness. He practically forgot that he has a wife to take care of. And Devahuti also, although the daughter of a prince, daughter of a king, although she is a princess, she is living in a forest. No one around. No servant, no maid servant. We can well imagine what kind of life she must have been leading. She was the daughter of a king. So there must have been hundreds of servants and maidservants attending her needs all the time. But here, after she married, she just accepted the life of her husband. Where her husband is, she just went there. And there is nobody around in the middle of a forest. Like, generally, the royal family people, they lead in such a lead a life of such luxury that it has been described that a princess did not even touch the ground with her feet. That has been described about Sita Devi. Sita Devi decided to go to the forest with Lord Ramchandra. But Sita Devi didn't touch the ground with her feet. That means she was living in such luxury, and now she has to walk barefoot in the forest. The path that have strewn with pebbles and sharp stones, thorns. Like that is the Vedic culture. They accept the situation as it came. They didn't complain, oh, I am a princess, why do I have to live in the forest? Or Devahuti did not protest her father, nor did her father when was instructed by his father, Brahma. It's Brahma actually who suggested to Sayambhava Manu to get Devahuti married to Kardama Muni. And he did not protest, oh, Kardama Muni, why should I get her married? My youngest daughter, she's so dear to me. Why should I offer it to a mendicant living in the forest? No, he didn't question. Father said, Brahma said, so he just accepted it. And more difficult must have been the condition of Devahuti. Devahuti didn't question, my dear father, why are you getting me married to this person who doesn't even have a home to live in? Maybe just all he has is a small little hut made with leaves and branches of the trees. No one besides him in that solitary place. No, she accepted that situation. And she went there. And Kardama Muni was so absorbed in meditation that he did not have any external consciousness. And still Devahuti just kept on serving him with full dedication. And as a result of that, her body became emaciated. Her hair, such beautiful long hair she had, that hair now became knotted, matted. She didn't take care of herself anymore. So as a result of that, due to a complete neglect of her body, although she was a princess, she became thin, as just skin and bone. There was no arrangement for food, no cooking arrangement. She was just eating wild fruits from the forest and roots. But then we see another side of the story. One day Kardama Muni noticed that Devahuti became emaciated. Her hair got matted. She was she is looking so unkempt. She is just covering her body with some tree bark. And he felt sad that here is the daughter of a king. And because of her loyalty to me, she has accepted such a life of hardship. So he felt that now I must reward her. He took compassion upon her. That this lady, for my sake, has undergone such severe austerities. So I must do something to reward her. And what did Kardama Muni do? Kardama Muni just created a planet. Not a palace. He created a planet with hundreds of thousands of servants and maidservants, with palaces, with lakes, with gardens, with all kinds of opulence. And not only that, that planet could actually move in the space according to the will of the driver, according to the will of Kardama Muni and Devahuti. Kardama Muni asked Devahuti, so where do you want to go now? And Devahuti said, let's go to the heavenly planet. Immediately, the planet moved to the heavenly planet, Sargaloka. Now I want to go to Indra, Surya Loka, Chandra Loka. And they just kept on traveling. And so this is the potency of a Brahmana. Although living in a forest, alone, performing austerities on the bank of a river, no external consciousness, but he had the power to create one planet. And that would just travel through the space according to his will. So this is the Vedic culture. In one hand, there is total renunciation. And if necessary, there was an absolute opulence. It is not, Vedic culture is not the life of hardship alone. In one hand, there is a life of hardship, but that hardship is voluntary. An exalted personality would voluntarily accept the life of hardship. It's not a life of hardship. It's a life of detachment. I don't need it. Therefore, I don't want to indulge in it. They're so advanced spiritually that they did not have any attachment to material comfort and luxury. And they would just lead a life of total detachment. But then, as we are seeing here, when Kardama Muni decided to give some pleasure to his wife, what did he do? He created one entire planet with inconceivable comfort and luxury. And in this way they spent years together. And then as a result of that, six daughters and one son was born. And the youngest one is the son. Who is the son? Kapil Dev, an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of God. Not six, I'm sorry, seven daughters. He had seven daughters. Was it nine? Oh right, that's true. Nine daughters, given to the Prajapatis. And he accepted, and Kapil Dev, the Lord accepted Kardama Muni and Devahuti as his father and mother, and appeared. And then we can see Kapil Dev also at some point decided to leave home. But before leaving home, he instructed his mother on Sankha Yoga. The Sankha Yoga is actually not different from pure devotional service. Although the Vedas have different branches of philosophy, one branch of philosophy, there are six branches of philosophy, Shat Darshan. Those Shat Darshans are Purva Mimamsa or Karma Mimamsa, Naya, Vaisheshika, Sankhya, Yoga, and Uttar Mimamsa. So Uttar Mimamsa is the final conclusion, or that final conclusion is Vedanta Sutra. But Kapil Dev gave the Sankhya philosophy. But when we see Kapil Dev's descriptions of Sankhya, then we can see that this is non-different from pure devotional service. Surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the goal of life. So in whichever way we go, that is the ultimate end. Sometimes people give an example that all the trains will lead to the same destination. All the trains will lead to the same destination provided your destination is correct. If your destination is Bombay and you get into a train that is going to Madras, you'll never reach Bombay. So all the destinations will be the same. All the trains will reach at the same destination provided the destination is the same. And that destination is Krishna consciousness. So the Vedas, the ultimate consideration of Vedas is Krishna consciousness. Therefore, all the Vedic paths are leading to Krishna. Whether we go through Karma Yoga, Karma Mimamsa, or Karma Kanda, or Jnana Kanda, or Upasana Kanda, which Kanda we go through, all are ultimately leading to Krishna. So Vedaischa Sarvair Ahameva Vedya. In all the Vedas, Krishna alone is to be known and understood. And in this respect, the proper analogy will be, there are different ladders leading to the roof. One ladder is on the eastern side, one is on the northern side, one on the southern side, one on the western side. From four sides of the house, there are four staircases. Where the staircases are leading, they are leading to the roof, the top. So you may take the stair from the east or west or south or north. That doesn't matter. But you have to take the right staircase. And the right staircase means studies of the Vedas under the direction of a qualified teacher. Therefore, the qualified teacher had to be a devotee of Krishna. Like the class, students may be of class
5 or 8 or 10. But the teacher has to be qualified. The students are of the class 5, but that doesn't mean the teacher also has the knowledge of only class 5. Then will he be able to teach? No. The teacher has to be a master's with a B.Ed. and other such qualification. He may be teaching in class 5. He may be teaching in class 8. He may be teaching in class 10. He's expert in teaching in any class. Because he has the complete knowledge. So similarly, that complete knowledge is Krishna consciousness. Therefore, it has been always pointed out that different subjects may be there, but the teacher must be an expert in Krishna consciousness. Jai Krishna Tattva Vetya Shei Guru Hai. The qualification of a teacher is that he must be Krishna Tattva Vetya. He must be an expert in Krishna consciousness. And then what will happen? Whichever branch he is taking, his teaching, he will eventually lead it to the ultimate point. Whether it is Karmakanda section or Gyanakanda section or different sections of the Vedas, doesn't matter. The goal is the same. There may be, and Prabhupada pointed out, that there are different processes. Generally, there are few prominent processes. One process is performance of sacrifice. Another process is the performance of meditation. Another process is Ashtanga Yoga, Eightfold Yoga System. Another process is performance of austerity. But whatever the process may be, the goal of all these processes is to understand Krishna. Similarly, there are different branches of philosophy, like Karma Mimamsa, Naya, Vaisheshika, Sankhya, Yoga, Uttar Vedanta Sutra, Vedanta. So all these different branches of philosophy are actually, when we go through them, we see that they're gradually leading to the point of Krishna consciousness. Once I gave a seminar on that, and like how the 6 branches of philosophies are eventually, there are different levels of understanding. Like, Purva Mimamsa, or the preliminary conclusion. What is the preliminary conclusion? Preliminary conclusion is that as we act, accordingly we get the result. If you act in a nice way, the result will be nice. If you act in a wrong way, then the result will be, unpleasant. If you act wrongly, will you be rewarded? You say, consider, you are in a school. If you act in a right way, then what will happen? The school will reward you. But if you act in a wrong way, what the school will do? Will they reward you or punish? Will the teacher reward you or punish you? Naturally. A person prepares himself nicely. What happens as a result of that? He gets credits. He gets rewards. If a person acts in a wrong way, he gets punished. So what does it mean? Now, this can lead to a conclusion that right action will lead to enjoyment, wrong action will lead to suffering. What is right action? Right action is called punya, and wrong action is called pap. So as a result of punya, you will enjoy. As a result of pap, you will suffer. Is it very difficult to understand?
It's very simple to understand. It's common sense. So that is called karma mimamsa. That is the conclusion of the karma mimamsa. You want to enjoy? Okay, fine. Act in a right way. And don't act in a wrong way. But then, after enjoying for a long, long time, ultimately what you realize, is there any uninterrupted enjoyment in the material nature? Can anybody say that he is only enjoying and there is no suffering? No. Material life means there is suffering. There is bound to be suffering. Even a king suffers. And material life is full of suffering. Janma mrittu jara vyadhi dukkha doshanu darshanam. Birth, death, old age and disease. Adhi atmik, adhi daivik, adhi bhautik. Threefold miseries. Can anybody avoid that? No. So then the natural question will be, why am I suffering? I do not want to suffer. I want to enjoy, and in order to enjoy, I am making so many arrangements. But then why am I suffering? Then that is actually leading to the point of naya. Naya means logic. Logically you consider why you are suffering. And what will be the conclusion? This body is meant for suffering, and this material nature is a place of suffering. So you have a body which is meant for suffering, and you are in a place which is the place of suffering. Can you really enjoy? No. So logically conclusion is that this is a place of suffering. So then it leads to the next point. What is this place then? Why am I suffering? What is this place is composed of? And then it is leading to the analysis of the material nature, Vaisheshika, which is the atomic theory. Ultimately, this material world is composed of minutest particles. Vaisheshika is actually leading to that. The most scientific understanding. Then it's leading to Sankhya. Sankhya is leading to Yoga. Then from Yoga, it is leading to Bhakti. What is the ultimate end of the Yoga? Let's just briefly analyze that. Yoga is Ashtanga, eight folds. What is the last stage of Yoga, of Ashtanga Yoga? Samadhi. And what happens in Samadhi? What is Samadhi? Samadhi is the perception of the super soul in the heart. So a spirit soul, a minute soul, is seeing the super soul. When a small man comes across a big man, then what happens? In normal condition, what would happen? In a proper condition, what would happen? You'll surrender. So that surrender is the beginning of devotion. From surrender begins the devotion. Sharanagati. Surrendering to whom? Surrendering to Krishna. Why? Because he is the supreme. So this is how it is ultimately bringing to the final point, Uttar Mimamsa. Final conclusion. What is the final conclusion? Surrender to Krishna. So very systematically the Vedas are bringing the living entities or a practitioner. And similarly the teacher will bring him. Like a teacher will initially guide his students. Like a student, what does a qualified teacher do? He gives him the lessons of class 1. Right? First year is class 1. Then class 2. Class 3, class 4. Gradually he is coming to the what is it called? School leaving certificate. Madhyamik. Yeah. Here they call it Madhyamik. Yeah. School final. Then after that, college. Then after college, university. So gradually, he is preparing the student to come to that ultimate state of education, learning. So what is that ultimate state of learning? The ultimate state of learning is devotional service. And it leads gradually, first Karmakanda, then Jnanakanda, then Shuddha Bhakti. Or there is another way of, when it goes to the activities, performances, practices. There is animalistic practices. Then there is human practices. Then there is divine practices. There are different types of practices, or achar, paschachar, virachar, then daivachar, deva, like the demigods, divine. And then comes to the final point of pure devotional service. So there is no need to think that this is a process of suffering, voluntary suffering. No. It is a process of pure enjoyment. Whatever is your desire, as in the case of Kardama Muni, we are seeing, he had a desire. But the Lord fulfilled that desire. And eventually what happened? The Lord appeared to him as his own son. Even before the Lord appeared to him, he was so pleased with him. And he said, okay, I will fulfill your desire. So similarly, if we become a devotee of the Lord will fulfill all our desires, appropriate desires. If we make a wrong desire, he won't fulfill that. If our desires are on the right track, the Lord will fulfill our desires. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Does anybody have any question?
What is the minimum qualification required? Like, is it this necessary test for the group of maybe Anantamadikari or?
He has to be a devotee. First thing, he has to be a devotee. And preferably an Uttamadhikari.